Now, during this show, we've been investigating laughter. And one of the things that makes most of us giggle is being tickled.
Tickle monster.
The power of tickle. Now, some people are uber ticklish, whilst others don't react at all to a gentle tactile tease. And what's more, it's almost impossible to tickle yourself. That is, unless you have the psychiatric illness, schizophrenia. In order to investigate this, Professor Daniel Walpert from Cambridge University built himself a tickle machine, the equivalent of a robot holding a feather duster. I met with him, firstly asking him what tickling can tell us about how our brains work.
The reason we were interested in tickling is it's a very nice example of how the brain does sensory processing. So one feature you have to do when you process sensory information that comes in through your visual system, through hearing or through touch, is that some of the sensations you get are due to what you're doing with your own body. And some of it just comes about passively from things moving around in the outside world. And a fundamental thing the brain wants to determine is what bits of the sensory input I'm getting come from an external source and what comes from what I do. And tickling is a very nice example where when you do something to yourself, it feels very different from when it's done externally to you. And so there were hypotheses from the 50s which suggested that perhaps tickling had to do with the fact the brain make predictions of what you were going to feel based on your own actions and remove that off. Very similar to the way those noise-cancelling headphones work. On aeroplanes, they cancel off the external sound, so you hear the internal sound coming from your speakers, but the brain would have to make a prediction, a rather complex prediction, of what was going to happen. To study this, we set up a really nice robotic interface, which allows to control the relationship to what you do and what you feel. So you'd hold a stick in one hand attached to a robot that moved in three dimensions, and we could track that movement and use it to control another robot which tickled you. And so we could replicate an old 70s study where either you moved and tickled yourself or the robot just tickled you without movement. And what we found is what we'd expect. It felt much less ticklish when you tickled yourself compared to the robot tickling you. But the really nice thing we could do is then put in some different perturbations. So subjects would move back and forward with the tickling stick and we'd replay that to themselves in tickle mode, but with time delays of a tenth or two-tenths of a second. And with these very small time delays, the tickling sensation became greater and greater. And by three-tenths of a second time delay, it felt like the robot was just tickling you and much more ticklish than you were doing it to yourself. So it seemed that temporal causality was very important for cancelling off the sensation.
And what happens in, for example, schizophrenia, where people with schizophrenia can actually tickle themselves?
So there was a prominent theory of some of the delusions that schizophrenic patients have. For example, they have something called delusions of control. And that means they make normal movements, but they claim their movements are being controlled by external sources. And so this predictive phenomenon can actually be used for a different thing, not only to cancel off sensory feedback, but also to determine whether the movements I'm making are due to me or due to an external source. So the moment I can hear a voice speaking in this room, but I'm pretty sure it's my voice speaking in the room rather than you speaking or my voice being played back to me. And one way you can do that is I can make a prediction based on what I'm doing to my vocal tract and to my lungs of the sounds I should hear. And if those match well with what I do hear, it's me doing it. On the other hand, if I hear my voice being played back, I'll realise it's not me because I won't have made the predictions of what I should hear. And so one theory of these delusions of control that schizophrenic patients can have is that they fail in terms of their prediction. They're surprised by their own movements because they don't predict the consequences and therefore attribute them to external sources. The consequence of this is that effectively they don't have the predictive ability and therefore they should have no difference in their tickle ability compared to self-tickle and external tickle. And although I wasn't involved in the study, a group of patients were examined up in Edinburgh and it found exactly that. They didn't show any difference in their perception of self-tickle compared to external tickle.
So they can effectively tickle themselves?
It's more likely that they can tickle themselves compared to normal people.
And what else have your tickle machines been telling you?
Well, based on the tickle study, we actually went on to look at some other things. So one thing we were very interested in, I have two children who at the time of that study were quite young. And what you'll notice about children on back seats of cars on long journeys, they tend to get into these fights, which tends with one of them does one thing to another, the other one responds, and it quickly escalates to the point at which you scream at them. And my two daughters would get into these fights, and they'd often claim, both of them, the other person hit them harder. And I felt as a neuroscientist, it was my job to explain, because I know my children never lie, to how they could be telling inconsistent truths. And so we thought from the tickling study, we could probably explain why these sorts of fights tend to escalate. And that's because when you actively do something to someone else, because you generate the commands to do it, you predict the sensory feedback and subtract it off. So when one child hits another, they think they've hit the other person less hard. So if the other child retaliates with the same force, the first child thinks it's been escalated. So based on that observation, we decided to run these sorts of studies, not in children and hitting, but with adults and just gentle touching, in a tit-for-tat type game. And what we found is when we got people to play a tit-for-tat type game where one person touches another and they have to touch back with the same force, if they don't know the rules the other person is playing by, and that we brief the subjects in different rooms, we find the forces they use escalate rapidly over the course of 5 or 6 turns each. And if you ask the people, what rule do you think the other person was playing by, they'll say things like, well, they're being asked to double it. And so we've done quite a lot of studies now showing that when you generate forces on the outside world, you always tend to underestimate the forces that you're generating due to this general predictive phenomena. And I think that's true not only of forces, but also in terms of speech. We always think we're speaking quieter than we really are, and so on. It's a general feature of attenuating what we believe we're doing on the outside world.
And how does this fit in with patients with schizophrenia?
Well, the prediction from this is a nice prediction. So in normal subjects, when they feel a force passively and have to reproduce it actively, they push too hard because they attenuate their own forces. And since we believe there's a failure of this predictive mechanism in patients with schizophrenia, then effectively we predict they should be better at that task. So if you don't attenuate, you should be better at matching forces. And the nice thing about that is mostly in patient studies, you assume the patient's going to be worse at something. And here we have a prediction they're going to be better. And we've tested this out in a group of patients who have schizophrenia and age and IQ match controls. So what we found is they're significantly better than controls in that when they experience a force passively and have to match it actively by pushing with their finger, they do a much better job than normal subjects. Interestingly, we see quite a variety of attenuation in normal people. So some people attenuate a lot when they produce forces, some don't attenuate very much. And we've recently had a study in Cambridge where we gave people a delusional inventory questionnaire. So these are just normal undergraduates in Cambridge. Questions such as, do you ever feel you're destined for greatness? And because we're in Cambridge, many people have delusions they're destined for greatness, and that's part of a delusional thinking.
I was about to say, can you get a normal volunteer amongst the Cambridge students?
We get a range. You know, the questions go from, you know, do you ever think people are talking about you behind your back, to do you ever feel you're a zombie with no will of your own? And so from this, we can get a measure on each subject of the delusional thinking. And what we found is it strongly correlates with how much they attenuate. So that even with the normal population, somehow delusional gradations of thinking correlate with how much you attenuate when you're doing these force matching tasks. Well, the more delusional you are, the less you attenuate, so the more effect you have on the world around you. The basic experiment is very simple. People put their finger under a small lever, which is attached to a little motor. And the motor generates a small force on the finger and then stops. And the subject's task is then to use their other hand to push on the lever from above to generate the same percept.
Ah.
And so what they do is they tend to push too hard, because when they do it themselves, they predict what's going to happen, subtract it off, so they have to push harder. And they push harder by about 50%. So if they experience a force of, you know, a kilo, they will produce, you know, 1.5 kilos of force to get the same experience.
So people that are delusional, they actually have a very accurate self-representation of their effect on the world around them.
That's correct. That's correct. So people with schizophrenia who have these illusions of control, they are able to match accurately because they don't have the predictive phenomena, and therefore they can actually match more accurately than normal subjects.
So are they delusional?
Well, unfortunately, yes, because what it means is they find it hard to separate out things that they've done in the world from things that just happen in the world. So you need this predictive phenomena to be able to know, is it me or is it someone else which is doing something? And they're not able to disambiguate between those two, even though they can match forces more accurately.
Thanks to Daniel Wolpert from Cambridge University. He probes delusions using tickle and tapping machines to get to grips with why people with schizophrenia seem better equipped at tickling themselves. It's due to the problem of distinguishing whether sensations arise from one's own actions or from external sources. So most healthy volunteers can identify sensation that they cause themselves and then discount or attenuate them. Hence, our inability to tickle ourselves. However, some patients with schizophrenia seem to lack the ability to attenuate the sensations arising from their own actions, which leads them to showing little difference in their perception of external and self-tickle.